The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 477. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Joining me on the show this week is a returning guest who first appeared on the PVD Cast last October, episode 449, I'm talking about actor extraordinaire James Dumont. Now, most recently, James is probably very well known for his role as Chad on HBO's The Righteous Gemstones. And we do talk quite a bit about the ending of that show, as the fourth season is the final season, of which the show just wrapped up this past weekend. So we talk about the vibes on the set and the opportunities that that show gave to James and his son, actually. But we also really focus in on James's new project called Unit 234. It's an action-adventure thriller that's hitting theaters this weekend, May 9th, at selected theaters across the United States, as well as on video on demand. So we talk all about the project, including the stars, Isabella Furman, Jack Huston, and of course, Don Johnson. You're going to find out that it's an awesome flick that you definitely do not want to miss out on. So before we get into that conversation, I need real quickly to thank a great sponsor of this podcast. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. I was just down at the store the other day, and as I shared, I believe, last week, they have some awesome stuff behind the counter, some really old vintage stuff. You know, I mentioned that Mad magazine that they had from 1960, but they got tons of that era of stuff, as well as brand new single issues, graphic novels, collections, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered for your comic book fandom. So you need to check out the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can follow them online. WGComics.com is their web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'm going to sit down and chat with James Dumont. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me once again on the PVD Cast is, well, one of the busiest actors in the industry, Mr. James Dumont. James, how are you, man?
Good, John. How are you? Good to be back. I'm a glutton for punishment. You know, I just got to just come on. Let's go. Let's do it again. Let's go.
Well, I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Good.
Last time we talked, you mentioned that you live in New Orleans as well as New York and LA. So how's New Orleans? Have you been back recently?
Yeah, I'm here now, and then I'm leaving for Los Angeles on Thursday, so I'm in time for the opening weekend of Unit 234, which is on Friday, May 9th. So, so I'm here, and then literally right from LA, I'm going from one coast to the next. So, that whole thing of being tri-coastal, on Thursday, I go to LA. I'm there till Tuesday. From Tuesday, I go from LA to New York, and then I stay in New York for about a month and then work my way down to back to New Orleans. So, yeah, got a lot going on because we have a couple friends have films that are in Tribeca Film Center, Tribeca Film Festival. So I want to be there for that. One of my producing partners has a film there. So, yeah, it's going to be May, June is going to be New Orleans, LA, New York, and then back to New Orleans. So it's like it's a triangle. That's therefore the Tri-Coastal. See how we did that there? So yeah, so that's what's up. Yeah. I kind of like, you know, like these days with self-taping, you can and people do live in multiple places or they work or willing to work local hire in certain areas. So that was fairly normal for me 15 years ago. Now it's really normal now. So, you know, I was kind of a pioneer of these things, of kind of living in one place and working in other multiple markets. And now because of self-taping being the standard and the norm, that's the way things are. And so, you know, that's can be difficult and challenging. I think there's a, you know, there's a lot of things to that. I know that there was a time where Louisiana had more film and television than LA and New York combined. That's not the case anymore. New York is still one of the most busiest markets, even over Los Angeles. No one would have thought that. But even places like Canada, Toronto is on fire. They have, you know, there's 134 TV shows currently in active development all over the world. And the big shift in change is, as of now, I'm aware of three shows on ABC, three shows on NBC, and three shows on CBS. So you have three major networks that have nine shows going on, but then you have Amazon that has 24. Then you have Apple that has 20. Then you have Netflix that has 24. And you go, wow. You know, there was a time where the networks had 24 TV series going on, and those, you know, cable was the early precursor to streamer, if you think about it in terms of subscription base. It's basically the same. They're just coined a different way. And now that they have advertising, they are the same as a network. So, you know, you're deciding if you want to have Netflix or Amazon with or without commercials. So what is the difference between network and streaming? It isn't, other than the money that the actors end up receiving on the bottom end of it. So yeah, so it's an interesting kind of time. One looks at these times as less opportunity, more creativity, or one looks at it as, well, I have to create something that and find a market for it and find an audience for it, as opposed to, you know, being reliant upon if the streamers, the networks, or the studios are able to provide opportunities. You know, there's just two ways of see, I'm big about actor empowerment because I'm a storyteller. I talk about this all the time. This is extremely important to me because I feel like we're at a time where individuals are feeling less than because there's powerful, because corporations run the roost. Corporations have influenced political policy, are influencing your day-to-day life, politics, you know, power. Billionaires are making decisions about our lives, you know. So we've allowed through our system to put people in power that will affect our everyday bottom line life. And, you know, we didn't think as much as they would, and now we're really seeing the impact of that. And what I mean by that is not to get political in the sense that, you know, I always say never let anyone disrespect you as a storyteller, because storytellers are and will always be in the history of time the as Shakespeare said, to hold his sword a mirror to nature. Storytellers will tell the stories of the people that were here while we were here. And that's more powerful than billionaires and corporations and politicians and political parties, all those things, is that the storyteller, even when there weren't words, was able to tell the stories with rocks and stones and grunts on a wall, you know, about the people that were here while we were here. So I feel, I know it's easy to kind of pick on the artist or the, oh, you're an actor. Like but the reality is that someone sends me an email the same day or the next day or in 48 hours. I know nothing about this person. I have to create a human being. I have to figure out what they say. I have to figure out what they do. I shoot it. I edit. I light it. I do the sound of it. I perform it. And then I email it off. And I've created a human being in same day, 24, 48 hours, and I've told the story and I've sent it off. And that's my job. And if things go well, someone recognizes it, remembers it, is impacted by it, wants me to be part of the story that they're telling, or they don't. But the reality is that's my job, is to create human beings and not necessarily human beings that everybody would, you know, oh my God, he's so gorgeous. Like, not like the regular, the human person, the father, the husband, the doctor, the son, the politician, the, you know, the bureaucrat, whatever it may be, you know? So it's like, I feel this is, I don't want anybody to disrespect the storyteller, because I think it's an interesting, either it chose you or you chose it, but it's like 50, 100 years from now, someone's going to need to know how we lived here. If human beings even live on this planet, we don't know that. That's to be determined. I kind of don't think so, but it's to be determined. Is that, will the planet be able to sustain human beings? But when COVID hit, when we were faced with like a life death thing, what did everybody do? They were ravenous for stories. They were music was like burned up them ravenous. We burned through billions of content. So in the most dire times when we were facing a worldwide pandemic, what did we do? We went to the storytellers. So this is why I realize how powerful it is. And now that there are people in power want to take away funding for artists, musicians, and schools to tell stories. Why? Because we will hold you accountable for what, how you lived and how the decisions you're making will affect future generations. This is no different than the guy that was created go to man, and then the animals, the buffaloes came in, you know, and they killed us. You know, like, we got to watch out for the buffalo. You know, like, somebody's going to tell you what's ahead, you know, what to look out for. Again, it's a long-winded way to kind of just say, I'm so appreciative and grateful and have optimistic and hope about the stories that I get to tell, have told, and will tell in the future.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about one of those tales, because the last time that we spoke, I believe the project was still in production, but it's ready to come out now. As you've mentioned it already, Friday it drops. It's I guess you could say it's an action adventure type of film.
Oh, it's an action thriller. There's no two ways about it. It's a cat and mouse game, you know?
And that project, of course, is Unit 234. So yeah. How excited are you for this release?
Oh, dude, I'm flying from here to LA just for the opening. It's like, are you kidding? That's how excited I'm. No, because it's so hard. It's so hard to get movies made now. It's so hard that they ever see the light of day and get distribution, that anybody sees it. And this movie was a solid one from the get-go. Derek Steiner wrote a really tight script. It is a thriller. It's got action in it. Hello, Don Johnson. That doesn't hurt. You got Don Johnson in there. You got Isabel Furman from the, you know, the Orphan franchise, you know, amazing. And she gets to do some action and kick some ass. I get to swear in here. Yes. Are we good?
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, sure.
Then I'm going to fucking swear all, but no, I'm kidding. they say it's a sign of high intelligence, and I fucking believe it. And then you have Jack Huston, you know, from Boardwalk Empire and more recently Mayfair Witches. So our triangle of folks know how to tell a good story. And know how to keep it very taut. And then we have an incredible Andy Tennant, who's our director, who directed Hitch, directed Sweet Home Alabama. Like, you know, like, it is a kind of a perfect storm. And my idea, my world is, and the fact I get to be like Don Johnson's right-hand man, henchman, bodyguard, driver, you know, confidant. What's fun to me now is it's an extension of what I've done the last four seasons on The Righteous Gemstones, where I've been Danny McBride's, you know, ass kicker for Christ. Like, Danny's like, go take care of this guy. They're like, all right, I'll burn down the church and I'll beat this guy to a pulp. Like, I'll do whatever you want, dude, you know? So it's fun that I've spent the last, you know, 6 years and four seasons and 20 episodes on Gemstones being, you know, doing Danny McBride's or Jesse Gemstone's bidding. And then to move into like supporting lead again, I'm back to the supporting lead where I want to be in this little sweet spot. I'm back being a supporting lead in a movie where I'm working opposite Don Johnson. I mean, like, what's not to love about that? And then the big kicker is we shot in Grand Cayman. This is not Grand Cayman Island, but these sunsets that we had every day were like this for like an hour. Like, it would just change colors. So for me, I had a great time. It was 6 weeks in Grand Cayman Island. We did some day shoots because it was super, super hot. We got those knocked out. And then the rest of the time, we all shot at nighttime. We couldn't do any work till that beautiful sun went down, and it couldn't have this sunset. We had to wait till it was dark and then we could start shooting. So it allowed me to have the entire day in Grand Cayman Island to go swim with stingrays and turtles and learn how to scuba. And like, you know, like, no one, this is like a dream job. And the fact that I didn't have tremendous amount of dialogue. I had some sections where I have some paragraphs here and there, but I'm working throughout the movie and I'm present throughout the movie. It's like a kind of a dream job that you want. I think about it. I don't know if you ever watched, God, what was the show on HBO with the Wealthy Family. It was before, just before The Righteous Gemstones, whatever the case is, there was a driver that was the bodyguard for Brian Cox's character. And it was like, you know what I mean? He's the, yeah. But that was his job. His job was like, he was, didn't say much. He had a couple scenes, you know, but he's like throughout the whole thing, I'm like, now that's a good job that you want. You know what I mean? Not severance. It's, they used to call it, you know what I'm talking
yes,
about?
Yes. Right? I'm looking it up real quick. Exactly. Succession is Brian Cox. Succession, yes. Exactly.
So
there we go.
There was a character of Colin who was like Brian Cox's character, like his driver, henchman, bodyguard, and he took care of stuff. You know what I mean? And so I was like, that's a good, that's the kind of role you want. So that's what Leon is. That's what my character is in the movie, is I'm his confidant, his right hand. I handle things. And then when some ass needs to be kicked and I'm packing major heat, I got to work with you know, this is pre-Rust. We didn't have to have fake guns. This was a real, I had an M16. I mean, I'm Ramboing, boy. I ain't messing around. So it was like, that's a joy of joys, you know? And the fact that we did it 3 years ago, they were really insistent on having a theatrical release. I think a few streamers wanted to really jump on board early. We're getting a theatrical release. It opens on this Friday, May 9th. It'll be in 5 cities. Now, I didn't know how long it was going to run in cities, but I know that in LA, it's going to run for an entire week. So it's going to be in Minnesota, Orlando, Atlanta, LA, and Detroit on May 9th. And also, it drops on VOD. So if for some reason you don't want to go to the movie theater, I think this is a good movie theater movie, so much so that I'm flying out to LA to see it in the movie theater. But I also think it's a great one to just kind of curl up and order on VOD and go for it. You know, it's a solid thriller. And we had fun. And, you know, you're in a beautiful place. It's kind of hard not to love to work in an environment that gorgeous, you know, expensive, but gorgeous.
I'd like to ask real quickly about your director, Andy Tenner. Yeah. As we mentioned, he's got a lot of solid movies to his resume. Yeah. What do you think he specifically brought to the table for this project?
I think one of the things that's great about Andy, and currently he's like one of the showrunners and directors of The Bookie. Andy has the ability to specificity of character, and very finite direction. I also feel like, because again, this could be a straight like action shoot 'em up kind of thing, but I think because if you look at Sweet Home Alabama or even look at Hitch, it's like even in there there's action, but it's character driven story, and I think that's one of the things why I think felt he was a really kind of perfect fit for this. And also, I don't think people necessarily, you know, when you have like a kind of a very popular hit, they want to just keep having you do the, and we talked about this. Same thing with actors. It's like you do that thing, it's like Matthew McConaughey could have done romantic comedies till the cows come home. Just take your shirt off, have a drink and go, you know, like, but he decided he wanted to have a different type of career and he made choices accordingly. And I think one of the things Andy and I talked about was that I think when you do that really good romantic comedy, and then they're just going to call him they're not going to call him for anything else. Cause like you did that well and that worked. So let's just, we don't have to change anything and you don't have to work on any other skills. Like just do this thing that we like, you know, and that happens with a lot of audiences. And I think some actors' careers, and I would say Don Johnson kind of falls in that category. I think there was a time where people didn't necessarily want to see Don in a different way than maybe Don did. But he grew and he evolved and, you know, Quentin Tarantino brought him back in another, gave him, you know, due credit for the actor that he is. So I feel it's like, yeah, with Andy, I felt like it's specificity of direction, but character driven direction. And that's, I don't think anybody's really kind of paying attention to that so much. Sometimes I realize there's certain directors that are more actor directors. Most of my favorite directors were former actors. So they have a way in which they're speaking to me that's actor to actor. Andy was a former actor. So there's a little bit of that. I think our conversations are quick and more concise. Same thing with like Peter Berg. It's like, I finish his sentences now. It's like, he'll walk over from the monitor and halfway there, I'm like, you know what I was thinking? And he goes, well, I was thinking this. I said, yeah. And then I was going to do that. And he goes, we don't even meet. Like, he goes back to the monitor and I just go to work. It's like, you know, we're a couple. I just kind of finish his sentences. So with Andy, I felt he was driving more from character and allowing the action to kind of be the secondary. I think primary was character-driven action, as opposed to action for action's sake. And that was the big difference I felt.
Do you have any cool Don Johnson stories?
Ah, I wish I did. I wish I did. No, the timing of it was very difficult because our first day of shooting, he had found out that this is when Bruce Willis publicly came out of having the condition of his brain, you know, having problems. And he and Don are very close. So it was one of those, and, you know, he and Bruce are very close. He helped Bruce kind of get a break in a certain area. So our first day of shooting where we could bond, and I have all these other relationships and friendships with him and people that know his sons and stuff. And I, you know, like your best buddy has just been diagnosed with an incurable illness. So it was like, it really, we never really had that chance, you know, you know, because there was other things and worked different days, but the scenes that we were together, you know, and when you're on set, the meter's running. So he was at a different hotel. So, you know, like I wish I had more to tell, but we didn't, it didn't kind of pan out that way. I felt that first week together, we were going to have that opportunity, but I think that news was just a little too hard that week, you know? And also I realized too, of working with all different types of people, you got to read people to know when to shut the fuck up. Yeah. It's like, yeah. You know what I mean? Leave people alone. And my job is to really leave him alone and not intervene and be almost, you know, invisible yet present. And so, you know, sometimes I take my role to heart, and that was my role in my position in this movie. And given the news that happened, I felt, let me just stay consistent with that. And then we just never had that time to go hang out or have a beer or do golf or, you know, like any of those things. So there you go.
Well, let's talk about another one of your co-stars, Jack Huston. As you said, he's got a lot of accolades. And let's be honest, too, he's got lineage in the industry.
Yeah, just a little bit. The Huston family, I mean, like, hello. Like, you're like, you know, film royalty, you know. And that family is just, you know, ridiculously talented. Yeah, Mike Veer, and I've had I'd say the opposite. I have great Jack Huston stories of now, you know, hanging out and being together and his assistant. He ended up doing Mayfair Witches, which is shot in New Orleans. So we ended up hanging, you know, seeing each other, you know, apart from that, apart from the film. And so that was really great. And, you know, the other thing too with him is a work ethic and an approach to character and seriousness that given the pedigree, I think some people don't necessarily take that for granted. He does not. I think he knows that he has to, you know, find his own way and, you know, pave his own path, even though, you know, he has this family. You know, there's something about like nepotism that I think what people don't understand about it is, because I have people that are friends of, you know, sons and daughters of actors. It's like, it's an added pressure. You would think it's helpful and you think it's a blessing, but it can really kind of be a curse, because you're not, who are you? You're the son or the daughter of a famous particular person. But what I've found is those who are those things are now becoming incredible creators. In fact, I'm producing with one of them. It's like, no, it's they're even more cognizant of how lucky and privileged they have their circumstance, but they don't rely on it in any way or laud it, or it fuels them up even more to create their own individuality, which everybody's entitled to do. But I think because of their name or their pedigree, there's this expectation that's put upon them that is not put on any other people. So I think people need to understand that part of it too, is to live up to be the son or the daughter or the brother or the sister of, you know, ask how it feels to be Frank Stallone, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, or Jim Hanks, you know, Tom's brother, you know, it's like, that's been a helpful thing, but it's also kind of been hindrance in a way, if you think about it. But them to create their own way, that's always the way. And people think because of who they are, their name, they have this. But my experience with Jack was just nothing but joyful and fun. And he was a great person to be around. You know, his kids got to come out. His wife was there. I mean, we really had an incredible experience. And Isabel Furman, man, like, Yeah, I'm always like, if you're a fan of mine, I'm a fan of yours. And the fact that she was already a Righteous Gemstones fan, like when we started, of me and my son, who's on the Righteous Gemstones, or has, we were as of last Sunday. Can't hold on. I just got to just take a moment here. You're a fan of mine. I'm a fan of yours. Like, you know, it's just like, it was a kind of a love fest, and it just made it so much easier to work together. Even though our characters are total enemies and go toe to toe with each other, our off-camera stuff, like we text, we have a relationship. It's, you know, it's fantastic. So, you know, you got three really great people in there. We also have an amazing actor, Chris Baker, who's from Australia. He was, you know, had a recurring role on Ozark. He's in there. Juvian Marquez out of New York, Manny Galan out of New York, like these amazing kind of actors that built up this really great ensemble. So yeah, it's a good little thriller, man. It's, you know, curl up with some popcorn, pick your VOD, or here's an old school idea. Get the hell out of the house and go to a movie theater. I know it's crazy, but go see a thriller, you know?
Well, I guess we have to talk about it. I mean, yeah. you just mentioned it, the Righteous Gemstones, by the way, season 4, fantastic, as every season has been.
Yeah.
What was the vibes like those last few weeks of shooting? Because you knew in advance that this season, the series was going to come to an end. So how did that impact people on set?
I know that my son was there for the last day of shooting. And, you know, the fun part for my son is like, he's grown up on that show. He started when he was 14 and he's 21. So it's like, you know, this from 14 to 21, I don't know if anybody looks at their life and go, what did I do between 14 and 21? It's like, I was on this TV show. So, you know, he was the little badass kid at the kids table. And now that last scene, he's sitting at the table. Do you know what I mean? He's a gemstone. He's a part of the, you know, and I think it really kind of hit him all the incredible experiences that we've had together. And that's the big thing that I'm kind of like, you know, we have a brand new manager that's just been incredible and done a lot for us in a very short period of time. And, you know, we're shopping around and trying to figure out what agents and places that we want to work, people we want to work with. And it's like, I say to people, you know, I'm most comfortable and happy when I'm with my family and when I'm on set. And the fact that I got both of those for 6 years, 4 seasons, he did 25 episodes, I did 20. There were times that we were in the same scene, but we never did anything together. You know, it's like, and have Father's Days together on set. I mean, it's just Danny McBride. I mean, is hands down a brilliant, kind genius. He can write, he can act, he can direct. He can be in the scene with you and still give you a direction and note as a director. He can be in it and look on the outside. I mean, like, that's a very, very rare skill to have. But what I think the biggest thing is the generosity of spirit and the culture of no power trips. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing you find in the Danny McBride set, is these are people that he's been working with since college and he's in his 40s. So these are people 20 years together that they've all been making things together. Mm-hmm. And so it's so much like a healthy family, more so than most families. It's a healthy family. And so to come to work and be there, it's like coming home for Thanksgiving. And that vibe, you know, I'm crazy optimistic. I kept thinking it's going to go, or we're going to do another thing. And a couple of the rumors that are rolling around are a couple of these, maybe a gemstone movie or some one-off specials, like a Very Gemstone Christmas or a gemstone, you know, Christ is Risen, Easter Resurrection, you know, like there's, those are possibility. Baby Billy spinoff. I mean, Jesus, anybody would watch Baby Billy all day long. Like even Teen Just could be a show. And I'm telling you, people would watch that shit all day long. An older cocaine induced Baby Billy as a teen Jesus. Who wouldn't watch that?
With his dick hanging out too.
His 80-year-old dick double, you know, hang, like, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I feel like, you know, those last few days, it was very hard to kind of accept that we were coming to an end, but I have to bow to the wisdom of Danny knowing when to call it. And we're coming out, like, if you go on Instagram, like all of us are just, we are photo dropping, dumping so much great fun shit behind the scenes, our favorite scenes, our favorite act. Like we're doing it all week long. Like I'm still every day I've been posting like 20 pictures of like, what about this? What about this video? Like there's just so much to do. But the thing that's interesting about Danny McBride is, I've been talking about this a lot lately, is like when it was Eastbound and Down, it was a one man show. Everything lived and died by Kenny Powers. Like every storyline, Kenny's in, it's just Kenny and who everybody else. Then when you got the vice principals, you kind of split up that focus between Walton and, you know, and was it Gambie? Yeah. So it's like Danny and Walton's like, there was a split of a power structure, you know, like it kind of went back and then they were like at each other and then they were aligned. So it was just really two kind of storyline. And then you look at Gemstones and it's like, it's the genealogy tree. Like even they were going past lives and bringing dead people back. You know what I mean? Like we could do, you could have done a show or an episode on every single character of the show and run ad nauseum if you wanted to. But I do think Danny feels like there are certain shows and people have all this expectation and buildup, and then you get really disappointed on the finale. And Danny felt like even when he was writing it or halfway through it, he was like, oh, I think this is the end. I think this is what I want, where I want to go. Because if we go on, it's the, you know, Fonzie's going to jump the shark.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
If we go on and try to, I think what's interesting now is like, here we are 4 seasons. We do 9 episodes a season. You know, we almost got 50 episodes in. And if you think about it, like some of like first 2 seasons, we did have one hour. First episode was like an hour. Last episode was an hour. So if you add it up, it's coming out to almost 10 episodes, you know, if you think about it. So in 50 episodes, I think people are just discovering this show. And we've been here the whole time because everybody was talking about Barry and everybody's talking about, you know, the Schitt's Creek. And then all of a sudden there was this weird switch of like, all of a sudden the Bear is a half hour comedy and there's nothing funny about working the PTSD of working in a restaurant. There's nothing funny about that show. There's nothing comedy about that other than it's a half hour drama that's now in a wrong category. And then you have Baby Reindeer and there's nothing funny about a stalker. Like there's nothing funny about that. So the fact that our first episode of season 4 was like, Danny's like, oh, okay, I see how this works. So you want a half hour drama that's got a little comic edge to it. Okay, I'm going to do Civil War, Bradley Cooper. You know what I mean? I'm going to go back to the source of this family in 30 minutes. You know, if this is what this is what you want. This, and I just thought it was one of the most brilliant thing as somebody who's been an Academy member for over 20 years and a, you know, voter all that time. Like, I just thought that was a very smart move to go, okay, I'm not, because the thing about shows are, if you're not in New York or LA, it's hard for the Academy to kind of pay attention. Like they didn't pay attention to The Wire. They didn't pay attention to Treme, 2 David Simon series, you know, one of which I was on. And there's certain shows that they just don't pay attention to. And I go, we were like, Edie Patterson, Judy Gemstone, are you kidding? There hasn't been a funnier woman on television in the last 5 years. Easily. So I feel like, there's just brilliant things that are being done. So it's fun for me now because it's like, you know, finally people are paying. I get so many texts and emails and Instagram pages like, dude, Gemstones, are you kidding me, man? I'm late to the game. But I was like, dude, we've been here the whole time. Like we're in Charleston, South Carolina. So no one's paying attention, you know. But that's part of the deal of Danny's brilliance, too, is to get out of a place where the networks and the studios can have control over the creatives. Be in a place where you can do the work you want to do and be with the network. And I'll give it the old school network of HBO constantly did this. We see what you do, run your show, give us the budget. We'll figure it out. David Simon, run the show the way you want it. You know, like do what you want to do. Danny, do the show you want to do. What do you need to make that happen? And I think it's changed a lot because the studios and networks, as we see, are streaming. It's like, they're approaching this like any other business. Entertainment is just a small part of their conglomerate. Like Apple, they make watches and phones. You know, it's like, and computer. So entertainment is a small segment of what they do, but they look at it for this with the same profit margin of like, how do we make this cell phone for, like, we have to find a way to make it cheaper, to make it affordable, right?
Yeah.
And Amazon's business is not in the entertainment business. They were in, they're selling shit to you while, when you're in COVID. You know, it's like their profit margin is made up of other things, but they're going to approach this creative and artistic endeavor with the same for-profit business model, less cost, higher returns. So it's a kudos to the old guard and maybe, and hopefully the new guard of what, you know, Max is and what Warner is to go, there are certain people that know how to tell a story well. You will constantly make profit off of that content worldwide. Let them just tell the stories that they want to tell. I think Apple's doing a great job of allowing that to happen. And I think in a great deal, same thing with Netflix, same thing with Amazon, Hulu. You know, so I think they are allowing creatives to kind of tell the stories that they want to tell at the cost and the profit margins that make sense, you know. But it's different. It's a different time. You know, the studios, the networks, the studios were relying. They were the only ones that made content, was the only thing that they made. Movies and TV shows were the only things studios made. They didn't have other revenue sources to influence the way they which told stories. And I think it's different when you're, as I just said, you know, all the three networks are doing 9 shows and everybody else is doing 4 times as many. So, you know, the game has changed. It's an interesting time. But I'm also, you know, like, I'm very interested to see what Danny's going to do next. I have a project that I've been developing that I want to bring his way that's like right in their wheelhouse, and ways in which to do that similar to what they did with, you know, Eastbound and Down. You know, like Down, how, you know, you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be a crazy outrageous sets or costumes or, you know, like, let's just tell a good story that can go on for as long as you want it to go on for.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with James for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are the one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies, you name it, they got it. So you need to check out the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can follow them online. WGComics.com is a web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. You know, I'd like to talk real quick, if you don't mind, about your son, Kelton. What's he got lined up? How's he doing in his, you know, search or his finding his way through this industry?
Yeah, I think, you know, we raise our kids normal, like we're middle, because I'm a middle class actor, so like there's a sense of normalcy. Like he was going to school, he had 2 high schools while he was going to 2 different high schools. One was a creative art place, the other one was a Jesuit educate, and he was doing the Righteous Gemstones, and he still pulled a 4.0, so a 4.2 with honors. So it's like we still, as much as we're an entertainment father and son, like his experience, everybody loves their kid and they always think their kid's amazing. But one of the things that I really enjoy is how unsolicited people say certain things about my children in terms of how kind, you know, thoughtful, loving, caring, funny, you know, so it's, I usually get my feeling about my kids from the way other people kind of respond to them. So I think Kelton's navigated very well through, you know, he paid for his own college education. You know what I mean? Like he wrote his own check, you know, like I'm covering college, you know, I didn't have to think about it, which is amazing. But B, it's like that sense of individualism of I'm paying for my own education. You know, I by doing this show, I was able to do that. And so, and then, you know, he's going to get out of college debt free, which is an amazing thing. And so it's not lost on him because there are friends at school that are like, you know, cleaning the cafeteria and doing other things and work study. And, you know, he paid for his own school. So I feel it's like it gave him a sense of individualization. I also know that he's very, very humble and, you know, gracious. He took the closing of the show much better than I did, you know, because I was like, well, because I've been doing this for a long time. And it's like, I've been invited to have to come to Thanksgiving dinner, but then they're like, hey, thanks, it's time to go. You know, you're the guest, like get the hell out, you know? And the fact that we've had all this many episodes and this many seasons, given we had COVID, we had two industry crushing strikes. So I feel like he's navigated pretty well through this. I know that his interests are in theater, live theater. Being able to afford to do live theater means, you know, you have to do some television and film and things that, you know, to be able to supplement, to tell those kind of stories financially. But I feel like it's given him a lot of, we're now like the next project that we're doing together along with another, with one of his friends. We're going to produce a feature film together here in Louisiana. And the plan is to shoot it, you know, first of next year. And so that's, I'm going to try to continue what Danny kind of gave us the green light to do, which is to go, you know, I think there was a certain point, it was like season two or so, we were in the trailer. Kelton and I were in the trailer together and makeup, and Danny was in. He goes, I got two Dumonts on my show. He goes, that's pretty cool. And I was like, yeah, we think so too. You know what I mean? I was like, that just felt really good to go. You know, I got cast first and then my son auditioned. So there was this thing of like, you know, he always messes with me too. He's like, you know, you're not a gemstone, Dad. You're a friend of a gemstone, but you're not a gemstone. So just want to let you know. Like, you know, like, so we have fun in that regard. And we have just these incredible memories of together on the set. And I feel like I try to instill in both of my children. My oldest is no longer in the business, now come mostly writes, but it's like, I tell them certain things that I think are important, which is when you're on set and you get people's names, ask people's names, know who they are. They know who your name is. Make sure you put your, even if you have to put in your memo, just write their name down so that you welcome and greet them because they greet you accordingly. Don't be disrespectful and be kind and mindful. And then, you know, it's the old school parenting one of like, you get into your trailer and your costume is hung up. When you leave, you better hang up that fucking costume because somebody got here before you and somebody's going to be here after you. And you got to make sure that you respect and honor that they did that for you. So, you know, those little things, I think the hanging up your clothes is a fairly parent thing, especially to a teenager. You know, I know it's easy because you've got an 8 or 10 hour day and it's just easy just to throw it on the floor like you do in your room. But it was hung up when you got here and it's going to be hung up when you leave. And I feel like that's where I try to just be a good parent. And the fact that we make a living telling stories is it's no different. We did baseball together. We did, you know, and I remind him that life is made up of these moments of time. And so periodically I kind of turned to him and I was like, look at this, dude. You see this? Look what we get to do together. You know, and now I just want more of that. I don't want to smother him. I want him to kind of grow, but I also feel like all I want to do is spend as much time with him creating content that we're both excited about moving forward.
Okay, we're getting close to our time here, James. Yeah, yeah. And I know you're very, very busy, but I do have one other thing that I need to talk about because I'm curious about.
Yeah.
You were in a short film called This Is Jan.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about, for the listeners, what that film was all about? Because it seemed like a very interesting and unique project.
Yeah, that project, I can say, is on my top five of favorite experiences of what the project is and what it says and how it was done. It's a short film. It reminds me a little bit of Mad Men. In the time period of Mad Men, that 40s and 50s. And it's hard to kind of define what people's experiences were at that time and how to really kind of put a coin of what it is. But again, I don't want to spoil the whole story. But let's just say that there was a time that people weren't allowed to be who they felt they always were in their body. And that there was a societal expectation. I'll give a perfect example. Like my aunt and my uncle were married, but my uncle was gay and my aunt was gay. And they both were married to each other. They were teachers. And at that time, they weren't allowed to have the kind of relationships that they had outside of school in a public way. So they privately had to, they were married, they both taught. So they were teachers in a school, but they lived in separate apartments. They had separate partners. but they were, when they got to school, they were a married couple. And at that time, it was socially unacceptable for them to be gay, to be out and be gay. But yet they found a way in which to normalize their relationship because it was normal. They just loved this other person that happened to be of the same sex. But they had to kind of keep that quiet. And so This Is Jan is a little bit about that kind of time capsule of someone who's really trying to decide and figure out why they feel the way they feel in their body. And they're allowed to, for a period of time, be able to explore that. And without it being political or agenda-ridden, you know, I'm of the belief that people inherently are who they always have been genetically, and that depending on the circumstances and the time and the situation, and is everybody allowed to be the person that they always wanted to be? And I've had so many, you know, ironically, because I'm the father in Dallas Buyers Club, who, you know, I played the father in Dallas Buyers Club who abandons his own flesh and blood son, because he doesn't agree with a lifestyle choice that he has made of being trans. What was interesting about that experience was I made a choice when I was on set that I wouldn't speak to Jared other than in character, because I felt that this was a relationship that was very straight, very, very hard and constrained. And that I decided I would, and I never do this, I always introduce myself in the trailer or on set. I say who I am. I say we're going to work together. But in this scenario, I decided to not do that. And that, because I saw Jared over there and I saw him, he see me, and I knew who he was, and he figured out probably who I was. But we never spoke to each other as actors. We only spoke through character. What was interesting about that, and I feel like, and Jared did too, Jared felt that scene in Dallas Buyers Club with he and I got him the Oscar, because he felt other scenes really did well, but that scene, we did really incredible work. When I got the call back, I did it like 35 times. When we were on set, I did it like 45 or almost 50 takes. It was a lot. And we improv stuff and we said things to each other. Like I said things like, well, God is punishing you. He's giving you AIDS because you chose to be gay. So you get what you deserve. You know, like I said these things that, and then I flipped the switch and I said, man, I loved you, son. I've missed you my whole, like, you know, like we played this, we delved into the real experience of I'm going to abandon my flesh and blood because of what I think or believe, or you're making a choice. When he goes, like, it's not a choice, Dad. The first few lines are, he's looking at photographs in my office, which ironically were pictures of my wife and myself and my oldest daughter. And he's looking at photographs of a family that he's not a part of. And he's looking at it and he's holding the pictures up in my office. He's like, I guess I didn't make the cut. I was like, well, you made that choice yourself. And he goes, it's not a choice, Dad. So within three lines, you figure out the entire nature of this relationship. And in the course of the scene, he's begging for his life and he's begging for money. I even said improv things like, you know, the director had leaned in, incredible director, Jean-Marc Vallée, leaned in my ear. And he's like, you have a life insurance policy that pays millions of dollars when he dies. And then he walked away and he goes, now do the scene. So now I'm doing the scene knowing that when he says he has AIDS, cha-ching, the minute he dies, I'm going to get paid for all the pain and the suffering of being an outcast or having to hide that my son is trans. And, you know, and so what was interesting about that experience is then when we got to the red carpet and I got on the red carpet, there was a lot of gay, LGBTQ, lesbian, LGBTQ, like reporters and people that wanted to talk about this story. None of them wanted to talk to me. None of them. Because I realized that I represented the parent that abandoned them because they came out being gay, lesbian, trans, or whatever. That's who I represented. That's not who I was, but that's who I represented. And that was a very interesting thing to, and then all of a sudden Jennifer Garner like came up to me and was like, oh my God, that scene is my favorite scene. You're amazing. And then all of a sudden when Jennifer Garner thinks I'm amazing, then everybody wanted to talk to me. And then when they talked to me, they realized, wait, I'm not that person, but I represented any parent that has abandoned their flesh and blood children for coming out of being gay, lesbian, or trans. And man, that runs deep. There are kids that are homeless because of it. There are kids that are on drugs because of they weren't loved and accepted as they were or as they felt that they were. And I believe that everybody is entitled to be whoever the fuck they want to be. I think that's one of the greatest things about our country. Other countries, people are thrown in jail. They're murdered. I just feel like that's the beautiful thing that this country has is the ability. Everyone's free to be able to love and honor and worship whatever they want. There's no one way. That's how I feel. That's real patriotism to me. But again, I'm rare in that regard. There's other things that I'm very, very conservative about fiscally, but I feel like when it comes to people not being allowed to be who they are or who they feel that they are, that's where I have a hard time, because I know people that have women who have altered their bodies, breasts, lips, they've done everything in order for them to feel more like a woman and attractive. That is okay too. But why is it not okay for someone to finally be able to express who they've always wanted to be? And a lot of it has to do with the social norms that are there and being in the closet. So this is Jan as an exploration of a very specific time period of someone exploring that idea. And as I said, you know, it's on my top five of the projects that I'm most proud of, you know.
Well, James, let's start wrapping things up here. Where can folks follow you online?
Yeah, you can find, and again, if there's haters out there, don't follow. It's all good. If you don't agree, that's cool. But my social media is for social. It's for socializing. So it's at James Dumont, D-U-M-O-N-T. Also for actors out there who are looking to study and really want to learn about how to take to go from self-tape to set. I've been self-taping for 15 years, and I started a company called On Camera Workouts, called OnCameraWorkouts.com. And I have also an Instagram page called On Camera Workouts, where there's videos and tutorials and I give every Sunday. I talk about self-tape stuff. So I'm constantly at this point. I'm in the service part of my career, which is I've had an incredible career. I could stop right now and feel very that I did did some great work. And you know, the time capsule will show that this was important what I did while I was here, or impactful, or you were entertained. But I feel like I got a lot more to go. I'm on the third act of things, and so. You know, at this point, I feel I just try to share as much knowledge, wisdom, experience I have. And that knowledge, wisdom, experience comes from making a lot of mistakes and losing jobs and saying stupid shit on set. You know, it's like, so I'm trying to help I'm trying to put a ladder up for other younger, you know, and younger or older people coming back to the business after raising kids. I mean, I have my students, I have 2,500 students all over the world. I'm all over the world. And they run from 16 to 86. I have an 86-year-old client, you know, that's, you know, retired and loves to do this, retired judge, and I can give them any piece of dialogue and they're good to go. So yeah, that's where you can find me. I have a Facebook page that's totally filled up on both sides, LA and New York. But Instagram's my favorite go-to. I'm on Twitter sometimes, do a little TikTok here and there. But Instagram's my go-to favorite. And I got lots of great stuff up there. You know, it's just fun stuff.
Well, let's talk about one final time. Unit 234 drops this Friday. That would be May 9th. I don't know when you're listening to this, people, but it's out there. VOD, if it's not coming to one of those near you. Because I'll be honest, here in Columbus, the closest one for me would be Detroit. And that's a three-hour drive.
We're going to bring the movie right to your home. You can just click a button, it goes on your credit. You don't even feel it. It's like just happens. But yeah, so those are, and then right after video on demand for a little while, then we're going to go to streamers. So you will see it on a major. I can't talk about what streamer. We know we have a couple that are, but I think we already have a streamer deal. I just can't talk about it at this point. So video on demand is your best way to do it. If you're not in Minnesota, Orlando, Atlanta, LA, or Detroit, starting on Friday, May 9th. So please come out. It's a good time. And if you're in LA, I will be at the Music Hall Theater at 9 o'clock on Friday, May 9th. Be there.
Yeah. Say hello to James.
As soon as I get off, I'm texting an email to all my LA friends. That's what's happening.
That's right. And you know, you've sat through in a complete episode. You know, he's a great guy. So come on out in LA and see him.
Let's go. Yeah. I won't bite too hard.
James, thanks again for sitting down and chatting with me. It's been fun. Thank you very much.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with James Dumont, talking about his new movie, Unit 2, 3, 4, and a bunch of his other projects as well. And I got to say, I enjoy having James on because he's very insightful. He's very open and honest about stuff. And I appreciate that so very, very much. And no doubt, this is not the last time you are going to hear from James Dumont on the PVD cast. I can assure you of that. But at this time, I need to start wrapping things up. So let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode for that matter. First, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, or Threads accounts. Just look for @PVDcast. You can find me on Twitter. Yes, I'm still on Twitter. And my handle over there is @PVDMVP. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know where they can hear this great show. Well, there's a bunch of different places for that as well. PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get all of the newest episodes. But the PVDcast is also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to the search bar of your favorite app, plug in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it and you should find it. And if you're listening through one of those apps or outlets, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to rate and review because rating and reviewing pushes me up in the algorithm. And it's very important to not only myself, but these podcasting outlets and apps to know that you are listening to the PVD cast. And by the way, you don't want to miss an episode, do you? So make sure that you subscribe as well so that you never miss an episode of the PVD cast. But there's a third and final way that you can enjoy this show, and that is through the Facebook page every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast. So there you go, three easy ways to hear this great show, PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy.
Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.